broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Congresswoman Bachman, are you hypnotized tonight? Has someone hypnotized you?
They understand that this bill is going to bankrupt this country.
Feels bad. The toughest...
We are humbled by the trust that the Americans...
You have been tweeting me.
You blew it!
Hey there, Rick. How you doing, Rick? World-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show...
You have been tweeting me.
...that knows what it's talking about. We take it through the looking glass, where truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places... I got news for you. No other talk show would dare go every night here. And tonight on our show, we will be bringing you a little bit more of the postmortem. Marilyn Donnelly joins us from the Tea Party in California to talk about the victory. And it wasn't really a Tea Party victory so much as it was a victory for Republicans, for conservatives, for that certain anti-Obama administration viewpoint, less government, and so forth. It's been quite a war in the political arena in this country for the last 2 years. So Marilyn Donnelly will join us next hour to talk about that. This hour we have Mr. Stephen Bozell, and he will be with us in just a moment to talk about a very personal legal action that he may be forced to take part in. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and our website is philhendryshow.com, where you can go and get live streaming video and listen to live streaming audio of the show. And I was communicating with some dude in Toronto, very nice guy. He's got a radio show, I think, in Canada. And he said, how can I listen to the streaming audio of your show? I said, well, we have it on our video cast. He said, yeah, but I can't watch it at work. I said, well, then you just minimize the video screen and you are listening to the show. And he said, yeah, but he didn't seem to get that. I don't know why. I said, just take, don't watch it then. Just listen. No, I can't watch the video because I'm... So if you want live streaming audio of our show, you do have that option. If you are in an area of the country where our show isn't carried, or in an area of Canada where our show is not carried. Fortunately, we're in both countries. So join us at philhendryshow.com. Tonight on our affiliate spotlight, our good friends at WTKK 96.9 FM in Boston and at WLRT 1250 AM in Lexington, Kentucky. Two great stations on the Phil Hendry Show radio network. 877-876-PHIL. So don't forget, next hour we will do some Tea Party and political in general postmortems on the elections yesterday. Let me get Mr. Stephen Bozell on the line here from Corona, California. And before we really launch into the story, my understanding that you're going to file a lawsuit that involves members of your family?
Yes, sir. I'm going to be filing a lawsuit that would include my non-accessory, my niece, my sister-in-law, and my wife. I have in the past been involved in litigation of this kind, but this was serious enough where I've taken it to the point of including my niece, who is underage. She's a minor, and it's called a non-participatory accessory in a civil action.
All right, Mr. Bozell, you live in Corona, California, and you had a 3-year-old niece at your home with your sister-in-law, your brother-in-law, your wife, and you have 2 children, right?
I have a son who's 13. I have a daughter who's 14.
And you were there having a family afternoon when you were with you were throwing your niece in the air?
I was, yes. I had my niece who was 3 years old, and I was tossing her in the air. And not too high in the air, just high enough, you know, where children will have, it's fun for the children. And at one point, she came down a little awkwardly, and I missed her and dropped her. Now, it wasn't serious. She was not far from the ground when I did lose control of her, and she fell and hit her rear end on the floor. Now, she had on a pair of those plastic, very thick diapers, but she did cry and made probably more of a scene than she should have. I don't know if she was looking for sympathy or...
And how old is this baby?
She's 3.
3 years old. So you're tossing her up in the air like we do with kids, and she you missed, huh?
Yes, I did. I missed, and I felt very bad about it. I told my sister-in-law and her husband, Dave, a guy that I know very well, and I was very sorry. I did make the point that I think the child was making a bigger issue out of it she needed to, and maybe that's because her mother and father have encouraged that kind of behavior in the past, that if, you know, the child cries enough, then people will make a big enough fuss over her. So I did mention that, and I don't know whether that put them off or not.
Okay.
Later in the afternoon, my wife was sitting with me reading from the newspaper, and it was at that time she read, and I made notes for my attorney. She read a story from Paris, France, and the story goes as follows. An 18-month-old boy appeared unhurt after falling 7 stories, bouncing off of an awning into a man's arms, witnesses told Le Parisien newspaper.
This is a very famous story. I mean, the last few days, a very famous story.
Yes, sir.
This is the story of a little boy who fell out of how far?
It was, the newspaper says 7 stories, and the child bounced off an awning into a man's arms. It's a pretty incredible story. And
yeah, it's the kind of story when you hear it, you don't really, you don't believe it right away.
Well, and I don't believe it. I do believe it, but I think it's so incredible that my wife didn't need to bring it out when she did, because what she was doing, and I know what she was doing, she was reading it so that I would feel lower than I already did about dropping my niece. And I think she did it to have an amusement, and I think she did it to, you know, just to stick it in and make me feel like a fool. I turned to my wife at the time and I said, did you just read that story about that baby that fell out of that window? And she said, yes, I did. I said, is that because of me dropping Angeline, was the name of our niece? And she looked at me and rolled her eyes in what I considered to be an unmistakable look of, you know, 3 guesses.
What does that mean, 3 guesses? Like, you got it?
Yeah, like, in other words, you're right.
Okay.
And went back to reading the paper. I was very shocked, and I was very hurt. I asked her again. I said, are you reading about that baby that dropped out of a window to make me feel like a fool for dropping our niece? And she did another one of these eyeball rolls and curled her lip and just kept on reading. So that's when I left the table, because I was very emotional, as you can well imagine. And I went back to the master bedroom and just, I didn't know what else to do, but I just buried my face. I just buried my face in my hands, and then I got on the phone with my attorney.
All right. To my way of understanding, sir, and our number, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, to my way of understanding the story, the niece that you were playing with dropped, fell, and you were very upset. Was the baby hurt?
No, she wasn't hurt at all.
All right, she wasn't hurt, but you were still feeling bad about dropping her when you were throwing her up in the air.
Yes.
And so when your sister and your brother left, of course, you made that comment to them, maybe the child's making a big deal out of nothing.
Yeah, because I've seen kids pull this before. And
But what, three? How likely is it that a 3-year-old is going to do that?
How likely is it a 3-year-old is, if a 3-year-old if a 3-year-old's given a signal by the parent, you know, okay, this is a good time for you to make a big deal out of nothing, 3-year-old's going to go ahead. If they just see the high, parent gives the kid the high sign, I don't know what, if they work out a signal or something, but yeah, so the baby starts, you know, crying. And I mean, kids at this age can be coached very easily, Mr. Henry.
All right, so you believe that the parents coached this child into crying more than the child should have, and then that afternoon, your wife read this story about a baby falling 7 stories and being caught by a man. What was your feeling?
That she was trying to humiliate me.
Well, what did that mean? I mean, in other words, this was a man in Paris who was able to catch a baby and you couldn't?
Yes, sir.
And okay. So she was saying, look at this guy. He can catch a child from 7 stories up, and you can't even catch a baby that you're tossing in the air from just a few feet.
That is absolutely correct. And then if you work into that, as my attorney, Dolores Blasingame, in Riverside, California, she said to me that there is such a thing as a non-participating accessory. That would be the infant, the 3-year-old, who got the high sign or took the signal from her parents at the right time and started bawling and crying.
When the baby fell, and if you don't mind me interrupting, Mr. Bozell, when the baby fell, was she really, really crying?
She was crying, yeah. But then I picked her up and I said, okay, it's Uncle Steve. And then her aunt took her, And I saw the aunt turn the child's face to her, and I distinctly remember a kind of a look in the aunt. She was looking at, she was eyeballing the baby. The baby and the aunt were eyeballing each other. And I saw the aunt nod or otherwise give a look like, all right, now. And that's when I heard the child really start to cry loud. Then that afternoon, I heard my wife saying that some guy caught a kid from seven stories up. And, you know, at that point, I put it together. And that's when I called my attorney. I was shaken. I was scared.
We talked to your attorney, Dolores Blasingame. She said that at one point you wanted to get away from the house. Why?
I didn't know if my communications were safe or not. I didn't know if people were monitoring what I was saying. It was all fitting together, and I was very frightened, and I wanted to get away from there.
And what were you frightened of? You thought that there was some conspiracy?
No, it's not a conspiracy, Mr. Henry. No, sir. It's just simply that once the baby and the aunt got it in their heads that they could start to, that the baby could sound like it was hurt bad, and then my wife talks about a man catching a kid from seven floors up, I'm in an emotionally compromised position.
Were you really hurt by hearing about a man that could catch a baby from seven flights up? I have to tell you, I don't know of anybody that could do that. I don't think that guy could repeat that in a million years. I think everything was perfect. I think the child hit an awning. The child bounced off of this awning into this man's arms. I mean, it's the most incredible story in the world.
Right. It's incredible, but it just happened to be in the paper, and my wife happened to be reading it to me like she was giving a... I said to her later, I said, it sounded like you were giving a Gettysburg Address or something. And the baby bounced on the awning, and the man caught it to make me feel like a fool.
Where is this lawsuit now, sir?
Right now we're drafting it at my attorney's office. But we are basically claiming emotional cruelty, infliction of emotional distress, slander.
And what is the slander?
The slander is my wife reading the story like I'm supposed to. My wife's reading the story about a guy that caught a baby that fell from way, way, way up, as if to say how great he is and how very small I am.
So you're suing your wife, your niece, your sister-in-law.
And the suing of the niece, sir, is simply she's a non-participatory accessory, but I have to include her.
But you are suing a three-year-old girl.
It is a non-participatory accessory, according to my attorney, and as well as my brother-in-law, Dave Jengel.
What's the family name, Jengel?
Yes, sir.
All right. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Speaking here with Mr. Stephen Bozell, who has brought legal action against his own wife, sister-in-law, and niece, because in dropping his niece, in playing with his niece and dropping her, he was later humiliated by his wife, who read him the story of a man that caught a baby from falling seven stories out of a building. And by reading that story, Mr. Bozell, she was attempting to humiliate you.
Yes.
By basically saying, here's a guy that knows how to catch a baby.
I believe so, yes, sir.
And then you also believe that the niece, your three-year-old niece and your sister-in-law engaged in some kind of a physical signal whereby the infant would cry more and pretend like she was hurt more.
I believe so, and my attorney certainly feels that it's justified, yes.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. It's a very unusual legal action of a man suing a wife, a niece, and a sister-in-law, and a sister-in-law and a three-year-old niece getting together and basically working out a signal whereby the niece will start crying a lot. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhendryshow.com with live streaming video and audio of the show. Stephen Bozell is a construction contractor from Corona, California, who has taken the unusual step of filing a lawsuit against his own wife, sister-in-law, and niece. And this occurred on this past weekend, a Saturday, when his three-year-old niece was visiting with his sister-in-law and brother-in-law. The child was being played with by Mr. Bozell, as we often throw children in the air and we catch them. You say, Mr. Bozell, you weren't throwing the child very high in the air, but the baby did miss your grasp at one point and landed on the ground. Not too worse for the wear, right?
Well, the baby was okay. There was no bruise. There was one bruise that seemed to be inflicted before, and I had brought that up to my wife, and she used that as an excuse to further demean me. I said, that bruise was there. I didn't put that bruise there. Your sister or your brother-in-law, or there's something else to put the bruise there, but the baby was fine. The baby only started crying, and I repeated this to my attorney. When the mother picked the baby up, was eyeball to eyeball with the child for a period of no more than a second and a half to 2 seconds, I think something was communicated, and at that time, that's when the child began to make a ruckus. Later on,
All right, and then later on, your wife is reading the story of this infant falling from a seven-story window in Paris, France, bouncing off an awning and being caught by a man, and you feel that was meant to, you call it slander.
It was an intentional slander on me. And, Mr. Henry, you have to understand that the point of this lawsuit is loyalty, and the vows of matrimony and the bond of matrimony is supposed to be strong. And for my wife to start to play with my mind by reading me a story about a baby that drops out of the air and a man catches it from Paris, and also backing my sister up, my wife has been disloyal to me and is trying to make me look like a fool, and wants to see my sister prevail in playing with my mind. I didn't even bring up to my attorney, very obviously, my wife is sitting there eating a Butterfinger candy bar. Now, some people are going to say that that's paranoid, but you've got to know my wife.
And your wife was re-eating a Butterfinger candy bar when she was reading the paper?
Yes, sir. And making a big show of it, licking her finger, look here, Butterfinger. And so, while you can call me insane if you want to, I have pioneered areas of law that will long remember the bounds of loyalty that a man and a woman should have with each other. And when your wife begins to mock you with a story about a baby sailing through the air, and very obviously after you had made a very innocent mistake of dropping this child, and then the child also turns on you, getting the high sign from the aunt, I had to do something.
So the lawsuit against your wife, your niece, and your sister. All right, sir.
Yes, sir.
877-876-PHIL. Let's take a phone call here as we move on to the story of Mr. Stephen Bozell. The story of this baby falling from the seventh-floor window in Paris is amazing. Lucas in Houston, Texas, listening on KPRC. Go ahead, sir. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yes, sir. Good evening.
Yes, good evening, sir.
Good evening, yes, sir.
Yeah, I've listened quite patiently to this man, and I feel that he's either the most unstable, mentally unstable individual I've heard of in a long time and should seek professional psychiatric help. And if he's not that, then he has come up with one of the cleverest, deceitful manners in which to redistribute wealth. And him and his lawyer is conspiring to shake down his relatives, and I think it's a pretty sad state of affairs.
Well, sir, I'm not in any way, shape, or form trying to... I'm not Barack Obama redistributing wealth. I feel that I was very hurt by the fact that I had dropped my niece. She's a very small child, and I was shaken by the event. And to know that I was shaken by the event, and then to also inflict emotional cruelty on me by reading me the story of the baby that fell out of the window, you don't find that to be cruel? I do. I think it also is... Go ahead, sir.
Well, I find it very disturbing that that someone reads things into such minor things as what you perceive to have been the baby's mother giving the baby some signal we're talking about sickling an infant. An infant is prone to, when they're hurt, they're prone to take and react quite spontaneously on
their
own.
But there was a delay. Yeah, there was a delay, though. And when the mother gave the baby the high sign, that's when the baby kicked in to the second level of the emotional reaction.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. We'll be back.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. We're also online at philhendryshow.com. Just I'm looking at Michael Moore on the Lawrence O'Donnell show, and other than the fact that I have a beard and he doesn't, we're dressed exactly the same way. And guys like us, check type shirts, Madras shirts, no. Bad move. All right, Stephen Bozell joining us here from Corona, California. Mr. Bozell, pardon me for just a little bit of levity there. I know that what you're dealing with here is a serious issue, and it has to do with loyalty, right?
I believe it does, Mr. Ender. I think it has a lot to do with my wife being disloyal to me and joining in the chorus of people who are calling me, he looks like a fool. I know what I know, and my attorney, and I thank God every day that I have a lawyer that knows what I have to deal with.
Did you have any reason to suspect your wife of trying to mess with your mind? Because some people are going to say you're paranoid. You know that, right?
Yeah, I understand that, Mr. Henry. No. My wife has, down through the years, gotten a kick out of seeing how far I can get pushed. But I never thought she would take a practical joke to this extent, that she would involve her three-year-old niece, her sister, and the story of this man catching a kid that flew out of the air. And I believe it's to humiliate me. I don't think that baby was hurt that bad.
You said the baby had a bruise.
The baby had some kind of a bruise that I wouldn't be surprised had been inflicted on that child before. Or I don't know. But the lawsuit has to do really more than anything else with the disloyalty my wife showed me by reading me a story of a man who had the guts to catch a kid, flew out of the air, and I dropped my niece. Okay, and the niece, the little girl that I was playing with, turning around and basically spitting in my face by, going in, throwing in with her own mother and father.
We are talking about a three-year-old infant, and just like that caller indicated, a three-year-old child negotiating some series of signals with a mother, it doesn't seem very likely. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Marty listening on KPRC tonight. Marty, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, I'm a grandmother and a great-grandmother.
Can I make one point, Mr. Henry? This baby, they show it those little Einstein DVDs from Disney. And I've heard them say they want to turn this baby into one of these eggheads that goes to college by the time it's 10.
Yeah. What is little Einstein?
These are DVDs that are made by Disney.
Okay. Sorry, Marty, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Okay, anyways. This is absolutely absurd. You are being paranoid. You either have a low self-esteem or it sounds like you think everybody's out to get you. Number one, a child has an instantaneous result before they cry. They get hurt, they look at their mama, then they turn around and start crying. That's natural. That's normal. It's happened to me with my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids. That's normal. As far as your wife, she's probably rolled her eyes and puckered her lips as if to dismiss you as saying something like that that's crazy. As far as that other man catching the baby, that's a miracle. That you ought to be happy that he did that. We all have accidents.
I agree with you.
Accident.
Yes, ma'am, I agree with you that it was a miracle. I tried to tell my wife that, but she's old.
But you're reading more.
She was
you're reading more into it than you should. You owe your wife an apology and your sister because this is ridiculous. For you to be that paranoid to think that they're out to get you or to make you feel small, that comes from within. You're feeling that from within. And that's all I've got to say about this.
Well, that's a very interesting point of view, Steve. All right. Why would they want to do this to you?
Mr. Henry, I'll tell you why. Because my wife, when she sees a story that's so amazing, and, in a lot of ways, that baby getting caught is a very romantic story. When she sees something like that, she wishes that she had men in her life that could do stuff like that. And when she doesn't see that, it makes her mad. So she looks for a way to say, look, see, I didn't marry a guy that catches a baby that flies out of the air. I married a guy that drops babies. And so when I dropped that kid, my wife, you know, immediately started going, and then this baby got caught by a man. And that lady talking about how the baby pauses and then cries, do they make eyeball contact from about 3 inches away with their mother? Does the mother wink? I don't think so.
And so you saw the mother wink?
I didn't see the mother wink, but I'm saying, would that happen? No. And I couldn't see, but the two of them were eyeball to eyeball.
Well, if your wife is unhappy, is she an unhappy woman?
No. I mean, I treat her good. But I think she's a practical joker, and any time she has a chance to make me look bad...
877-876-PHIL, Mr. Stephen Bozell suing his wife, his 3-year-old niece, and his sister-in-law for emotional cruelty and slander. When he dropped the 3-year-old, his wife then read him the story of a baby being caught out of the air by a man in France, and that 876-PHIL is the number, 877-876-PHIL, along the line here with Stephen Bozell from Corona, California. You say this is about loyalty, right?
It is about loyalty. That's what people don't understand. When you're a wife, you expect your wife to stand up for you. And I may be crazy or I might not have things right, but if I say to my wife that that baby was looking at its mother and got a signal from the mother and then started to cry, then my wife has no choice but to back me up. When I say to my wife, that baby was not dropped all that hard, that baby was dropped very lightly, then my wife has to back me up. And if I say to my wife, I want you to tell me the truth, are you reading me a story about a baby flying through the air or falling out of the sky to make me feel bad for dropping that my niece? You better tell me the truth. Well, then she has to tell me the truth. And when we were married, we swore an oath to each other and to God that we would stick up for each other through thick and thin. And so in many ways, she's committed a sin against our vows by teasing me. And
well, you don't think that teasing somebody is a violation of one's wedding vows, do you?
It depends. And in this case, where she has gone so far as to...
Mr. Bozell, I know it's emotional for you.
She's gone so far as to read out loud as if she's reading a speech at a convention, and the baby fell out of the sky and went into the man's arms and then looks at me like I'm no better than a child molester. I looked at her and I said, and this is why we took our oath through thick or through thin, for better or for worse, so you could sit there and eat Butterfingers. She didn't have anything to say. I noted, I made that notation, and I said that to my attorney.
Well, the idea of a woman eating Butterfingers, now you can say that that's an obvious attempt on her part to make a comment that you're a Butterfinger, right?
Yes, sir, that's exactly what it is.
All right. Does she like Butterfingers?
She likes Butterfingers. Yes, sir, she does. Yes, she eats Butterfingers, but she's eating Butterfingers at a time when this story about the man is in the paper and I just dropped my niece. Now, you can say whatever you want. There's no way that something like that happens and the things don't come together.
And well, when you say things come together, you see, either things come together, Mr. Bozell, or we put them together. If a guy drops his niece, and then the niece starts to cry, and then later on the wife is reading a story about a baby flying through the air, it could be that the woman just happened to see this story and is reading it out loud to you as a way of laughing, okay? Now, your wife also likes Butterfingers. Did she go out and buy Butterfingers knowing that she was going to tell you this story?
No, we've got Halloween candy left over. We had candy corn, but we got three Musketeers. And let me ask you this. We got Candy Corn and Three Musketeer and Almond Joy, but she chose a Butterfinger right there. And I'm going to take that with me for all the days that I live. That when the chips were down and my wife could have stood up for me, instead of violating our wedding vows and sticking up for her practical joker sister, her bum brother-in-law, her spoiled, rotten brat niece, instead of sticking up for me, she threw in with them, and she went ahead and grabbed a Butterfinger and was eating that, looking at me, licking her thumb, and reading a story about a baby that come flying out of nowhere. For me, that is...
To you, this is a violation of wedding vows.
This is absolutely a violation of wedding vows. And I told my attorney that. She did not want to go that direction. She wanted to go slander, emotional cruelty, and innocent accessory after the fact. I said, all right.
877-876-PHIL is our number as we talk with Mr. Stephen Bozell from Corona, California. He is filing a lawsuit against his wife, his niece, and his sister-in-law for mocking him, making fun of him because he dropped his niece when playing with her. Later in the afternoon, they read the story of the boy that fell from 7 stories up and was caught by a man in Paris, France. And his wife was eating Butterfingers at the time she was telling him this story. And it all puts together in his head as a mockery and slander, and that's the basis of the lawsuit. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, talking with Stephen Bozell here from Corona, California. And I haven't even asked you what kind of damages you're looking for, sir.
Well, they tell you $50,000. They make you put a number on it, but...
You don't know yet.
No, I don't.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, back here with Stephen Bozell in a moment.
Phil Hendry. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Mr. Stephen Bozell with us, our special guest on the baby that fell 7 stories in Paris, France, and was caught and was safe, is only a part of this story from a man in Corona, California, who was playing with a niece last weekend, threw the little child in the air, as we often do with children, and the baby slipped from his hands and fell. Now, there was no serious injury, but the infant did cry, and in your mind, that began a series of events. The infant was crying more than she should have. You think that this was something that the mother of that child and the child both agreed on. Your wife starts reading you the story of this child that fell in Paris as if to say, you aren't man enough, you can't catch a child that's falling out of the air. Mr. Bozell, I want to say this as kindly as I can. If I were to say to you that there's every indication, a lot of what people are saying here tonight is true, that you have a paranoid and perhaps... there's an emotional state that you need to address, what would you say?
Well, I would say this. You don't know my wife. And you don't know the kinds of stunts and jokes, the kind of attitude she's taken. She's always taken the side of the children. She's always telling me, you know every time you want to... She's always taken the side of the children. You know, and people... I'll tell you. I mean, ever since... it seems like ever since the Kennedy assassination, you can't say anything now. People think you're crazy.
And well, I don't want to get into that. You know, I don't want to get into 9/11, okay?
No, I'm not doing that. I'm just saying, all I'm saying is that my niece, I'm not blind. I can see when a three-year-old, I don't care if she is three years old. She's looking at her mother. The mother gives her her mother nodded. Okay, now, that's not just the baby saying, okay, I think I'm going to cry now. That's the mother giving it the high sign. Then my wife... eating Butterfingers and reading a story. Come on.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Viola, listening to us tonight on WWTN. Hello, Viola. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hello, Phil. I just wanted to say, listening to his conversation, he not only sounds paranoid, but he is self-centered. I'm divorced now, but I was married, and a marriage is 50-50. It don't revolve around one person.
Secondly,
when she read that article to the paper to him, I saw it totally different. I saw it saying, this child fell this high, hit the canopy, and bounced off, and then the man caught it. We don't know how far down the canopy was. She might have been trying to let him know, don't worry about it. If this child fell that far and it's okay, this child that we dropped is okay too. And
look at this guy caught the baby, and you can't even catch a baby that you tossed like two inches high.
But
and that's basically
still, but the story is we don't know how far that baby fell before it hit the canopy. The baby could have got hurt hitting the canopy. Is what I'm trying to say.
I'm trying
to tell you that if that baby could fall that far without getting hurt, more than likely your niece was not hurt.
All right, that's good. You may have that part of it covered, ma'am. But what about the fact that the infant and the infant's mother clearly were trading signals?
Hey, I'm a mother, and just like the other lady said, my child fell one time. And it wasn't no signal for me. He was startled, and then when he got up, he looked around the room, and then he just started screaming. I don't believe there was no signal given. That is children. That's the way they are when they're little. And the first thing...
You could have given that baby the high sign.
I do not believe that. And then the Butterfinger. He just got through saying his wife loves Butterfingers. Well, I'm a Butterfinger person, and if I've got all this candy sitting there and there's a Butterfinger there, I'm going to eat a Butterfinger. It has nothing to do with...
I understand it, ma'am, but it had been Halloween, as I'm sure you know, and we had every kind, Three Musketeer.
You also said her favorite candy was a Butterfinger. Well, if
that's
there's
right,
a Butterfinger in there, that's what she's going to eat.
Now, you may think I'm paranoid, but it sounded to me like you said baby finger. What'd you say?
Butterfinger.
She said Butterfinger.
All right.
Are
you telling me that you picked through Almond Joy and all of that?
If your favorite candy is Butterfinger, I mean, I happen to like Almond Joy. I would pick an Almond Joy over Butterfinger.
Holy God.
If there's an Almond Mail there. But what I'm trying to say, it sounds like you're self-centered. It's got to be all about you. Marriage is 50-50. You take the good with the bad.
How come she's always sticking up for some kid? And if she can throw in with a kid and a mother, all the better.
What do you mean throw in, man? This is a conspiracy of some kind?
It's her hooking up with her niece because she thinks she's so cute.
All right, Viola, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. Let's move on here to Orlando, listening on WEUS. Sharon, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi. Excuse
Hello.
Me. Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Yes.
Okay. I agree with all the other callers. This gentleman has psychiatric problems. He needs to see a professional. As that woman was saying, the baby's reaction is perfectly normal. When children get hurt like that and they're, you know, shocked or startled, they don't start crying until they respond to their mother's fear. It's a perfectly normal thing that the baby did, and he's blowing this totally out of proportion. It's totally ridiculous. And furthermore, I think if this court...
Can I ask you a question? I'd like to ask you a question. When have you ever seen a mother wink at a baby and the baby wink back?
You did not wink. You said earlier you did not see a wink. That's your paranoid delusion that you're adding to this event. You yourself said earlier that you did not see a wink, and I'm telling you that is a normal response between a mother and a child when a child gets hurt. You know, and furthermore, I think your attorney, if this case does get to court, should be reprimanded by the judge for bringing such a ridiculous, frivolous lawsuit and wasting the court's time. You need some help, man. And why would you stay with the woman that? Why would you stay with the woman?
With all due respect, you watch one episode of Law and Order and you think you know all about it, boy.
No, I'm an experienced person. I've lived for 56 years on this planet. I've had people that I know that have brought lawsuits and been sued. You're absurd. You're totally ridiculous.
No, ma'am. It may be absurd, but you weren't there. You didn't see the child. start making a big... The kid was smiling
how
at
many
me
people,
and then turned...
How many people have to tell you the same thing before you open your ears and start to listen? Every single caller has made the same remarks. So it's you against you against the rest of the world.
Can I ask you something? How likely is it that you drop a kid, then your wife starts reading to you about a guy that didn't drop a kid, and she's eating a Butterfinger?
Why would you stay with a woman? Why would you stay with a woman that treats you so badly?
Good question. Good question. I believe my wife has violated a number of areas of our prenup, and I think it is disloyalty, Mr. Hendry. So it could turn into a divorce.
So you're gonna, just to be clear, you're going to divorce your wife because you believe she and a three-year-old infant and your sister entered into some plot to laugh at you.
Okay. You know, you people don't understand.
No, you don't understand. The problem is that you don't understand that you need help. You need some professional help. You need some talk.
What help? I need a better lawyer. Yeah.
Well,
I need a niece. I'll tell you what, I need a niece that isn't such a smart ass. And I know she's only 3 months old, and I've never held that against her. But, boy, she does it again. Man, I'll turn her into cat food.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
I don't like it as far as I'm putting hands on my kids.
High school in Bachman, are you hypnotized tonight? Has someone hypnotized you?
I definitely can understand the way he feels to be.
Jews are good with money. World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night to 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast with a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. Through the looking glass we go. Ho! Going places other talk shows can't go. Republicans vow to roll back the Obama agenda now that they hold the majority in the House. Joining us this hour, Marilyn Donnelly from the Sunshine State Tea Party people. She's going to join us from Florida to talk about what's next on the Tea Party agenda. You know, it wasn't all about the Tea Party, as you well know. There were quite a few Tea Party candidates that were defeated, but... I think they got about 80% of their candidates elected last night. So it was far from any kind of a defeat for the Tea Party. It was quite an evening for them. And we're going to talk to Marilyn Donnelly in a moment about that. Our number 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. And of course our online presence is philhenryshow.com. If you head over there, you can take a look at a live streaming video cast of our show right now, as well as the live streaming audio. And you can access thousands of hours of archive material, thousands of hours of individual character bits. We have video archives. We've got on demand, as well as our podcasts, our mini podcasts, our classic Phil podcast. There's all kinds of stuff, man, going on at the Phil Hendry Show website because it's a radio show website because we know about radio and we've got a show that's worthy of archiving. So check it out, philhendryshow.com. All right, let's gonna get Marilyn Donnelly on the line here from Orlando, Florida, first and foremost, and say hello and a very good evening to her. A very pleasant good morning to you, Marilyn. How are you?
Well, it's been a wonderful 24 hours, a wonderful 48 hours, Phil, in the life of a neophyte politico. But I'm really enjoying it.
What a night for you, as well as the conservatives, Republicans, people across the country who were opposed to the current direction of the country. Quite a sweeping night, huh?
It was indeed. And we are poised for more and I think even better moves in the near future. And we are poised to take the message to Washington that we want smaller government, that we want individuals responsive to the electorate, individuals that are responsive to the American people. And we simply are not going to allow Washington to dictate to us how much of our hard-earned money we put into ridiculous programs that are designed to help no one, that could never possibly help anyone, and that are doomed to failure. And we think this is a great time, Phil, to bring more people into the Tea Party movement, by expressing, I think, a expansive and a point of view that is embracing of all American people. And to that end, the Sunshine State Tea Party, in referring to our founding fathers and mothers, which is something that will be a point of departure for us from other Tea Party organizations in this country, but we hope that others will pick up on this.
Well, you're talking about the founding mothers and fathers, which is not an... I don't think there's anything wrong with that. We've had a lot of women involved in the founding of our country. But are you talking about the Abigail Adamses and...
No, we're really not. Abigail Adams was a wonderful counsel to her husband. Martha Washington was the same. And certainly there were other women involved from the standpoint of domestic... Or I heard Ellen Burstyn once say that women are assistant people. No, we want the term founding fathers and founding mothers to be used in the sense that women as well as men were involved in the very creation of the legal charter of this country. That is the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and even to some extent the fighting of the Revolutionary War. Now, were there women at the signing of the Declaration of Independence? No, there were not, but it is not really a point that needs to be argued, because while there were no women actually there, the perception that there were is not too far off. It's not, in other words, the perception that there were women who helped write the Constitution, it is not that far removed from reality when you think that, yes, there could very well have been women helping with the Constitution. It just so happens that in those days, women were not allowed to do that kind of work. We have so many people who signed so many documents that founded this country. We can't recite all of them. So there's no, I think, problem in saying, well, there must have been a woman in there, or maybe there were women. It doesn't really matter. The perception that women helped found this country and helped write the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, as well as lead as soldiers in the Revolutionary War, would help so many American women at a time when we need to see ourselves far more actively than we do.
Yeah, but are American women going to want to see themselves historically? Are they going to, not themselves, but are they going to want to see other American women historically in a false light?
We don't think it's a false light, Phil, and I'll tell you why.
Why not?
Because had women been allowed to be involved in politics in those days, women would have signed the Declaration of Independence. Had women been allowed to be involved in politics in those days, women would have written the Constitution. So what we're saying is that, in essence, in a theoretical sense, women did sign the Declaration of Independence and write the Constitution. If women had been allowed in the military in those days, women would have been members of the military and would have been members of the Congressional Army. So it's not too far removed to say that women were a part of the actual founding fathers and mothers of this country.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. Marilyn Donnelly from the Sunshine State Tea Party joining us. 877-876-PHIL. We're talking about the Tea Party and the Republican Party and the conservative movement in this country and the great victories that you guys achieved last night. The victories that you achieved last night, are they making it possible for you to sort of take this next, and forgive me for using the word, but this next propaganda step?
Well, I don't see it as a propaganda step at all.
Well, it sort of feels to me like now's the time to empower women historically. So you want to say the founding fathers and mothers. Now, people are going to agree with that.
Yes, they will agree with that because there were founding fathers and mothers. But we want to go a step further. We want, when we say the words founding fathers and founding mothers, we want young women to believe that those founding mothers...
Yeah, I know, signed the Declaration of Independence, wrote the Constitution, And
well, don't preempt me, Phil. Let me finish. Yes, wrote the Constitution and signed the Declaration of Independence and fought in the Revolutionary War, and were every bit as much a part of the bloodletting and the conquering of the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War as men. Is it so? It doesn't matter, because had it been legal for women to do those things, then they would have. So this is a very subtle point, but we want it very clearly understood. Women must now be perceived as founding mothers, like men are perceived as founding fathers. But not in the sense that they baked apple pie, in the sense that they actually signed the Declaration of Independence.
And when you look at the Declaration of Independence and you see that there are no female names on that document, what do you say to a young woman who said, but we signed the Declaration of Independence?
You can certainly say to her that women were not allowed to sign the Declaration of Independence, and they weren't. Had they been allowed, yes, there would be female names there. Who is hurt by changing the way we teach history? These are small changes. There are no victims here.
So when you take a young lady and you show her the Constitution, and you look at the names of the delegates from each of the states who signed the Constitution, and there are no women, you say to that young woman, there would have been women signing it had they been allowed.
There most certainly would have been women signing it had they been allowed, but they were not allowed. But there are women's signatures that should be on the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution.
Who are they?
I don't know. They were not allowed to sign it.
But were they in Philadelphia?
I don't know.
Ms. Donnelly, were there women involved in the writing of the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence?
Mr. Henry, I don't know the answer to that. I do know it was illegal to have women involved in the creation of those documents. And so the women that were involved in creating those documents...
Well, you don't know that women were involved in creating those documents, do you?
And you don't know that they weren't. And that's the point that we are trying to make to our young ladies. I don't know if there were women in the Revolutionary and the Continental Army. I don't know that a woman didn't lead a charge on those British trenches at Yorktown. But it's time now to at least allow women to think it was possible.
And so to that end, we now begin to refer to them as our founding fathers and our founding mothers.
Founding fathers and founding mothers, yes. And this is part of our Tea Party, if you will, the embracing of a larger piece of history by the Tea Party. This was a wonderful win for us last night, Bill. We cannot squander the opportunity. And the founding fathers and founding mothers, and let me underline that, founding fathers and founding mothers of this country are smiling, I think, on all of us today.
All right, 877-876-PHIL.
And if I could make one more point, Bill, when we say founding fathers and founding mothers, we want to emphasize founding mothers. And I want to see the reaction of men when I do that. Founding fathers and founding mothers. What do men do? How do they react? A lot is going to depend upon that. A lot will depend how far we are able to move into the future. How far we are able to take this country will depend a lot on how men react to the phrase founding fathers and founding mothers.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. What do you think about incorporating into our speech now the line founding fathers and founding mothers? And not just from the standpoint of Abigail Adams and Martha Washington, oh, I don't know, cooking food or, you know, keeping a nice home, but from the standpoint of there might very well have been women involved in the signing of the Declaration of Independence and the creation of the Constitution. 877-876-PHIL. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
The founding fathers and founding mothers.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, welcome back here. Our number 877-876-PHIL. We'll get to some of your phone calls in a moment here. 877-876-PHIL. We've got on the line Marilyn Donnelly. Ms. Donnelly is with the Tea Party of the Sunshine State Tea Party. Marilyn. The victory of the conservative movement in this country at the polls last night has not only emboldened people in the Tea Party, in the Republican Party, to move their agenda forward, but you see this as an opportunity to expand the rights of women and the position of women in history. And that is with the phrase, the founding fathers and founding mothers. You said something before the break that I thought was interesting. You said as the length to which we are able to succeed in this country, how far we're able to go, will depend a lot on how well men accept that phrase.
Yes.
What did you mean by that?
Well, what I meant, Phil, is simply the founding fathers and founding mothers. That is a real statement. That is not a concocted statement. There were founding fathers and there were founding mothers. The founding fathers have been given a great deal of credit for the creation of some of the most epic documents in the history of self-governance in this world, the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution. There are no credit given at all to women in either the creation of those two documents or in any kind of service to this country by way of arms. That would be in the military. Our educational system must include in the phrase the founding fathers and the founding mothers, which is the way that we want that phrase to be heard, gives young ladies an opportunity to know that women were involved in the founding of this country.
But you don't want it just to be about women involved in the founding of the country like Betsy Ross or Abigail Adams.
No, it's too late for that. It's much too late for the tales of Abigail Adams and Martha Washington and Betsy Ross. We've moved past that.
But those are real women. Those were real people. And they lived. Eliza Hamilton is another. She was very popular.
Eliza Hamilton was a woman who had been married to a man that cheated on her. We want strong women recognized as our founding mothers. And those would be the women that founded the country and signed the Declaration of Independence. Now, I know that no women's names appear on the Declaration of Independence. That does not mean there weren't women involved in writing it. Now, I know there were no...
You're making an assumption there. I don't know. Being a fan of history and wanting history to be historically accurate...
Well, do you think history is accurate when it writes that there were only men signing the Declaration of Independence?
I think insofar as we know what the Declaration of Independence, what went into to creating the Declaration of Independence, I think that history is accurate.
And shouldn't history be fair to women?
History needs to be accurate. I've never said that history needs to be fair. History needs to be accurate. If it happened a certain way...
And what of the name Governor Morris on the Declaration of Independence, which we read as Guinevere Morris? Do you know who Guinevere Morris was?
Governor Morris.
It reads as Guinevere Morris.
So you're now telling me there was actually a woman who signed the Declaration of Independence?
I don't know. I can tell you there are interpretations as to the signing of that document, as well as the Constitution. And to say the founding fathers and the founding mothers is to say that the founding mothers did more then bake cookies and make beds and bring their husbands lunch.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. Do you believe founding fathers and founding mothers? You want this phrase used in schools.
Well, we want the phrase used in schools, but we want the phrase recited in such a way so as to emphasize the contribution of women, so it'll be founding fathers and founding mothers. And you give emphasis, founding fathers and founding mothers. You give emphasis.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number. Here is Drew in Boston. Go ahead, Drew, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
All right, I was just saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying, you know, that we should make it seem like women had a part in the, you know, founding of our country, but you really need to have at least one example that you could pull off the top of your head. You know, any given person could give at least three founding fathers, you know, right off the top of their head. So if you want to do the
fair... Those are the only ones that they recorded, only, though.
Well, I mean...
Those are the only people that they recorded.
Second, it's just, yes, I'm just saying, you know, you know, if you want it to be all fair, you know, then you got to be fair. You have to have an example, at least one, and saying, oh, well, if they don't keep records, that's, you know, that's a little ridiculous.
Exactly. I mean, but they didn't. They
you know,
didn't
you find
records,
you find but... love letters and stuff from people back then, you know. You got to find at least one document that had a woman that was saying that, the you know, what was going on is good.
Well, we feel that young women knowing that there were women there, and so to well, say that...
But we don't know that there were women there.
Do you have a document? See, you gentlemen don't understand. The history is written by men. They're not going to record the presence of women.
And are you saying that there were women there, but it was not recorded?
I'm saying it does not hurt us to tell our young women, yes, there were women there.
Even though we can't be sure.
What difference does it make? Who cares?
Well, want to take credit. You want women to take credit for something that you can't prove had anything to do with.
Who's to say that that name is not Governor Morris, that that name is indeed Guinevere Morris? We don't know.
That name is Governor Morris because the name is recorded elsewhere as Governor Morris.
The name is recorded elsewhere as Governor Morris, Phil, because that is what was on the Declaration of Independence. But the name could very well be that of a Guinevere Morris.
Well, then you're saying that there was a woman there and that she was dressed as a guy. I don't know. Drew, thanks for your call. 877-876-PHIL as we talk here with Marilyn Donnelly from the Sunshine State Tea Party. Were there women there?
It doesn't matter if they were really there or not. We want people to think they were.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, welcome back. I've got Marilyn Donnelly on the line from the Sunshine State Tea Party. Big wins last night for Tea Party conservatives, Republicans across the country. I stated at the outset, Ms. Donnelly, that the Tea Party didn't do bad last night.
Oh, no, we did very well, very, very well, Phil. I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 80% of our candidates were elected, so the idea that the Tea Party was not the story last night is very much not a factor.
But we're talking about you taking this win by the Tea Party and now using it to expand the influence of American history into all walks of life. You want it said now, founding fathers and founding mothers, even though we don't have evidence of women signing the Declaration of Independence or of the Constitution.
I'll give you an example. You know, if you say you believe in God and I say, do you have proof of God? You would say to me, who cares? So if I say to you that we had founding mothers who were a part of the writing of the Declaration of Independence, and you say to me, do you have proof? I say to you, who cares? Because it is more important for young women to know that women were there every step of the way, signing it, putting into play the Constitution, the War of 1812, as my father used to say, the whole Megillah. Do you know, Phil, whether the name Hugh Williamson is that of a Declaration of Independence signer or a linebacker for the Philadelphia Eagles? Hugh Williamson, who?
Well, I'm going to have to assume a signer of the Declaration.
Yes, he was the signer of the Declaration of Independence, but you could easily have thought of him as a black linebacker in the National Football League. Why couldn't he have been a black man signing the Declaration of Independence? Charles Pinckney, who was a very famous foppish man from South Carolina, was he gay? Abraham Baldwin, was he a transsexual? Is LGBT represented? All of these questions can now become a part of our national historical dialogue.
Not to the extent that you've got to invent things. 877-876-PHIL.
I just got done explaining and going through a great many examples and a lot of information, and for you to throw it all away with a comment before you go to a phone call, it irritates me. It really, I have to be honest, it really does.
I apologize, but that's my job. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Maurice on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Maurice. You're on with Marilyn Donnelly.
Yeah, Marilyn, I wanted to make a point that it seems like you're trying to rewrite history, and I think it's absurd because I don't think it's necessary to do that just for the so that young women can feel empowered. I'm an African-American. I'm a Republican. And to me, that's almost like saying, well, let's just say that there was white slaves so that black people will feel somehow empowered that, you know, they had some part in something that they didn't. I don't think it's necessary. I think you're
Why can't we do that? Why not do that? How do we know there weren't white slaves and black plantation owners?
Oh, come on. It's just pointless.
That's all it is. It's not even necessary. I mean, look at the achievements that lots of women have achieved without even having to do that. And, you know, people, like young girls coming up these days, they don't even put a lot of thought into things like that. Only thing they look at is, what can I achieve from this point on? So I don't think it's even in any point of rewriting
point.
History.
I agree with you there, but young women don't think about history. And as the result, young women find themselves caught in a world of contemporary issue and contemporary struggle that has no historical context. And I would want young women to understand that founding fathers and founding mothers, and you notice the way I say that? Can I ask you, Maurice, does that bother you?
Does what bother him?
It doesn't bother me. The only thing that bothers me is it's not accurate. And when you look at history, you want history to be accurate. I think it's better
to have
it that way and just to look at, okay, look how far we've come. Look what we've achieved now. Look what we can achieve in the future. I think it's much better to have it that way than to try and,
Would you call Crispus Attucks, who was an African-American, would you call Crispus Attucks, one of the men killed in the Boston Massacre by the British, a founding father of this country, a man who bravely stood up to the British and was shot down that night?
A founding father?
Yeah.
Well,
A revolutionary martyr, a revolutionary maybe, but not a founding father.
But I'm not asking you, Mr. Henry, because you're not black.
Oh, excuse me.
Well, no, I don't think that's the reason. It's just that that's not, he wasn't part of writing any part of the Declaration or signing it or anything else. And that's just the reality of it. It doesn't mean that black people don't have a place in history and black people haven't achieved anything, but
found out he had signed the Declaration of Independence and then was gunned down?
Who?
Well,
Crispus Attucks.
That didn't happen.
Well, considering that his signature's not on it,
we
can discover that.
How can you say that? What do you mean he signed it and then got gunned down?
Because it was in 1775 that Crispus Attucks was gunned down. And
no, it wasn't. It was in 1770. You got to get your history right before you can, rewrite history.
And that's very cute. My point is simply this. Again, founding fathers and founding mothers.
All right, I got it. All right, thank you very much, Maurice, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Crispus Attucks is not a founding father. Crispus Attucks is a revolutionary. He was an American revolutionary.
Let me tell you who Crispus Attucks really was. Crispus Attucks was a sailor. He was a seaman. He had just gotten off a merchant ship. He was drinking in a Boston tavern with his mates. He heard this ruckus going on down the street. He came out of the tavern and down the street and confronted the British. He was, yes, a revolutionary, and yes, he was a martyr, but more to the point, he was just a drunk that was staggering down the street. And
let's not start calling people names. You got women who were signing the Declaration of Independence, and Crispus Attucks is a drunk, and you're just all of a sudden, you know.
Well, why can't I start calling some of these people out if we do not allow women to take their rightful place at the Constitutional Convention?
At the Constitutional Convention?
Yes.
877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Tim. Tim, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Yes, I had a real quick statement for the lady on the
telephone.
Sir. She does understand that history is, in fact, based on facts. instead of just calling it a fix.
Yes, it is. I understand that. Hello?
Timmy there? Oh, I guess he hung up. And probably the reason why he hung up is because he heard you belch. Here is it Rafiq? Rafiq, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead.
Yes, I am. This is Rafiq.
Yes, go ahead.
I can understand the premise that she's attempting to use, but being a black man in America, I do have a history from my parents that have played a very important role in building this country. Now, what I'm saying is very brief. If that premise exists that she's trying to put forward, then everyone should be inclusive, not exclusive.
I agree. I totally agree, and that's why I think that Hugh Williamson could very well have been black.
Wait a minute. Wait a second. Hugh Williamson was a real guy. He was white.
Well, we don't know that for sure. And the reason why I say that, if you have the name Hugh Williamson, it sounds like a black man's name, doesn't it? Rafiq?
Yes.
Do you think the name Hugh Williamson sounds black?
What I'm saying is can be proven historically.
All right.
We have Christopher Adams, who fought in the Revolutionary War. We have my friends who helped build Washington, D.C. We played a very important role in this history.
Right.
So if we're going to say the founding father, mothers and fathers or founding fathers and mothers, we should also say the founding fathers, mothers, and enslaved.
Well, I'll go you one better. We should say the founding white and black fathers and white and black mothers.
What's wrong with that?
I mean,
there's nothing wrong with that. I like that.
All right, fine. But I want to tell you this. If we're going to say founding white fathers, founding black fathers, founding white mothers, that's okay, but you can't say that the founding white mothers were involved in something they weren't involved in. If you're trying to tell me they signed the Declaration of Independence or that they were at the Constitutional Convention...
Well, what about black people?
I think this gentleman put it very well. Black people built Washington, D.C. Many of them served in the Revolutionary Army. They went on to serve in the Civil War. There's a great many founding black fathers and black mothers, and white fathers and white mothers, but they weren't at the Declaration of Independence, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, Phil, you insult every black man when you say that.
How am I insulting black people when I say that?
Rafiq, tell him.
Hello?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
I don't think as much as in Sorden. If we really dig down deep into it, we'll find that Abraham Lincoln had black children. So shouldn't those children be represented through their father as being part of that signing?
I think so. I think Abraham Lincoln himself might have been black. And
well, come on, will you? How do you know that?
Oh, so it isn't possible, is it?
Well, I know that he was friends with Frederick Douglass. That's about all I know. Abraham Lincoln, you know...
What about Beethoven? See, this is what we're saying. And, Beethoven was black. So.
All right, thank you very much, Rafiq, for your call. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back. I'm just going to take a break here, because now I've got Beethoven's black, Abraham Lincoln, and let's see, what else? Well, 877... Oh, yeah, Hugh Williamson was a linebacker for the Eagles. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
The founding fathers and the founding mothers.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here on the Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL as we talk here with Marilyn Donnelly from the Sunshine State Tea Party. Great victory for the Tea Party last night. But today you would like to take that a step further, Ms. Donnelly, and you would like to almost codify founding fathers and founding mothers. You want founding mothers mentioned in every phrase with founding fathers, and you don't want that to mean that they were just Abigail and Martha making ice cream, that they were women signing the Declaration of Independence. Marilyn, you there?
Yes, Phil.
That's correct, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is, in essence, correct. you see, the Founding Fathers, and I have with me from our theatrical arm, Chuck Worsley. Chuck is an actor, and he does the recreations. He does a great many one-man shows featuring our Founding Fathers. And again, as I said to the last caller, it is how men react to the phrase Founding Fathers and Founding Mothers.
Okay, we lost... We'll get her back here. Let me... Marilyn Donnelly is our guest. Marilyn, are you there?
And that is why we have Chuck here.
Marilyn, we didn't hear that last part. Let me take a phone call, and then I'll get to what you have Chuck standing by to demonstrate to us. 877-876-PHIL. Mike, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Marilyn Donnelly.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, sir.
I just have a comment about your guest and her opinion and I'd like to see some proof of what she is trying to say happened with the Declaration of Independence. The Founding mm-hmm. Fathers were the people who signed the Declaration of Independence and actually founded the Constitution of this country. There were a lot of females and blacks who contributed to what this country is and what it started out to be. But if you're talking about Founding Fathers, then I would like to see some proof.
And Founding Mothers. And Founding Mothers as well. And the point that I'm making is you want proof. Well, right now what we're looking at is the very, very likely a possibility there were LGBT that were represented there.
LGBT at the signing?
Yes.
Lesbian, gay, bisexual. Who was a lesbian or a bisexual?
Well, I mentioned Charles Pinckney.
That's ridiculous.
But you don't know that. You don't know that. You're saying that because you want to believe that every. In other words, Margaret, what you're saying here.
I thought I was talking to a caller.
I apologize, Mike. Go ahead.
It's ridiculous. You just got through saying that Abraham Lincoln was black. Look, black people contributed to this country, and they've made some great contributions and sacrifices to this country. But to try to push your personal agenda, whatever that may be, is ridiculous. You're trying to rewrite history because it's something that you want to believe and apparently want to make others believe, and it just doesn't work that way. Facts are facts.
I'm trying to the Founding Fathers and Founding Mothers. If Abraham Lincoln was black, it's time to face the music.
We don't know that he's black. There's no evidence that he's black. None whatsoever. No evidence, and we have to go by way of evidence. We can't just say, I assume, based on... There's a lot of circumstantial things in this world. History has circumstantial evidence. But until such time as we can really connect the dots in a sane way, there's no indication whatsoever in Abraham Lincoln's lineage that he was black.
You know, Phil, you're doing a lot of talking, and you're not letting the callers talk. If you let the callers talk, I'm able to convince them of what I'm saying.
And I don't think this man is convinced at all. Mike, thank you very much for your call, sir. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Cheryl on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead. You're on with Marilyn Donnelly.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. First of all, God help us if this woman actually is part of the Tea Party, because to me it sounds like you have a very liberal agenda. And
No, I do not. I want women involved in the very building blocks of this country. No way. No way, Jose.
I understand that, but you can't reinvent history. You have no proof. Just because that you would like to think that it was that way, you can't actually say that it was. Because history is based on historical facts. That's the definition of history, is it not?
What do you think of the idea that, yes, that is what it is based on. How likely is it that a woman wasn't somewhere in the vicinity as they were signing that declaration?
It doesn't matter if the likelihood of them being in the vicinity. It's the fact of whether they were actually documented in being
right
there. That is history.
What do you mean?
History.
What do you mean at the vicinity?
As they were signing the Declaration of Independence, was there a woman somewhere within a 2 or 3 city block radius? Let me just ask that. Do you think that's possible?
Well, of course. But that doesn't
right
mean just because, I mean, if someone is in a 2 or 3 block radius of any historical event happening, does that mean that they are actually a part of that historical event taking place?
Does not. No, it does not. But it does give us the opportunity to contemplate that if there were women in the vicinity, why weren't they there signing the document? You see?
Oh, come on. Because there's a woman walking down the street outside of the very hall where the men were signing the Declaration of Independence. You're now saying, aha, maybe she was in there signing it.
I don't think I went, aha, like I'm in a Felix the Cat cartoon. I'm saying the following thing. To Cheryl, do you believe, Cheryl, it would matter if we said founding fathers and founding mothers? Do you think men would be able to get with that?
I don't really see a problem with saying founding fathers and founding mothers. I don't really think that anybody has an objection to that.
Okay.
The issue is trying to reinvent history or change, because you're very adamant about wanting to change what is taught in schools and in history.
Is there the possibility that when they were signing the Declaration, there was a gay man there in the building?
Well, so what if he was in the building? Oh, I get it. Was he serving the drinks? Maybe he was waiting the tables where they were going off and having their pints of ale or whatever the hell those guys did.
Maybe, and maybe he was there signing it. That's my point, Cheryl, and we'll never, ever make peace with history until we consider the possibility that, yes, there was a transsexual signing the Declaration of Independence.
Okay, first of all, it's not that you're wanting to just explore, from my understanding, it's not that you're just wanting to explore the possibility. You're actually wanting to document and say that it is fact, when in fact we have no fact that that's the way that it was. So you can't rewrite history just because you want to explore the possibility that it could be that way.
But you yourself said it was very possible that somewhere in the area, as they were signing that, there was a queer that...
Well, can we not use that word, please?
I'm sorry. What do you think of us saying founding fathers and... you know what? I got to get Chuck in here, Phil, because I promised him to do this. Chuck Worsley is an actor. When I cue you, founding fathers and founding mothers. What do you think, Phil?
Great.
Oh, you're lying to me.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
If I was down there, and those are my people down there.
It was just, you know, clear. That was it. No talk. He was suspended.
They understand that this bill is going to bankrupt this country.
One was emergency. Yeah, I just tried to kill my mom.
Call me naive.
George Bush still doesn't care about children.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go through the looking glass to take you places other talk shows cannot go. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We'll tell you what President Bush says when what he says was the worst moment of his presidency. President Bush's book, his memoirs, if you will, due out this month. And today it was released. People Magazine had it, a few others. The president commenting on what the lowest point for him was in his presidency. Pop star Pink says parents should beat their kids. And a dead candidate wins election in California. And, you know, I don't know why that's news, but it always is in the news, isn't it, that a dead guy wins.
Every time there's at least one dead man.
Why is that? I mean, I could say that people are stupid. I could say that I don't know why it is, but every year or every time they have an election, a dead man winds up winning somewhere.
Yeah, but what do they do when a dead man's there?
They got to do it again, man, or the second place vote. I don't know what it is. 877-876-PHIL. Phil Hendry here in our news hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. Ex-President George Bush, Kanye West calling me racist, my worst moment. And I'm guess there's some cynical people out there. Oh, yeah, sure. I believe him. You know, I would believe it if anybody said it. I mean, that's my worst moment. But we got so many cynical people in this country, you know, that anything that Bush says has got to be lying. Kanye West is at this. I wonder if that was a lie, why would he lie about that?
Well, I mean, you know, like, you could say the worst moment he had was when he, like, the worst moment he had was when, Nelson Mandela touched him, you know, because he didn't want a black man touching him. We ain't going to say that. He's going to say Kanye West called him racist.
Yeah, are you kidding me? You think that he's going to say that's the worst time?
I don't know, but I mean, you could say that.
Oh, get out of here, man.
I'm just saying.
I'm sure the worst moment of my presidency is when Nelson Mandela touched me.
Yeah, I'm just that'd be bad. What if he said that?
Then he would be a racist, I guess. Anyway, Kanye West is at the center of one of President Bush's worst moments in office. Former President George W. Bush, the 43rd president, conducted a sit-down interview with the Today Show's Matt Lauer to kick off the promotional tour for his autobiography about his years in the White House. Decision Points hit stores on November the 9th and covers topics such as 9/11 and his campaign for the office of President of the United States of America. Bush reveals what he described in the book as the worst moment in his presidency, being called a racist by singer Kanye West. I was a big fan until that moment, and when he said that, no, he didn't say, he said, I resent it. It's not true. It was one of the most disgusting moments in my presidency. The remark, which Bush said he did not actually witness but heard about later, occurred during a telethon for Hurricane Katrina victims. West had taken the stage, and, this is what he said.
If I was down there, and those are my people down there, so anybody out there that wants to do anything that we can help with the setup, the way America is set up to help the poor, the black people, the less well off as slow as possible. I mean, this is Red Cross is doing everything they can. We already realize a lot of the people that could help are at war right now, fighting another way, and they've given them permission to go down and shoot us. George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Wow. Anyway, in an interview with a Houston hip hop station, West responds to President Bush saying the comments at the telethon was the most disgusting moment of his presidency.
I definitely can understand the way he feels to be accused of being a racist in any way, because the same thing happened to me, you know, where I got accused of being racist. And with his, it was a lack of, with both situations, it was basically a lack of compassion that America saw in that situation. You know, with him, it was a lack of compassion, with him not rushing, you know, him not taking the time to rush down to New Orleans. But nonetheless, you know, I think we're all quick to pull like a race card in America.
I guess that's the closest he's going to come to.
Yeah, saying sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, the president said my record was strong. I felt when it came to race relations and giving people a chance. He told Lauer. Now Kanye West responded, and we just played that clip for you. West, by the way, was accused of racism after his outburst at the MTV Video Music Awards when he interrupted Taylor Swift's acceptance speech last year. And by the way, Taylor Swift's new album has sold almost 2 million, a million and a half, something like that.
Well, not 2 million, like 1.03. Here, 1 million.
I get it, bud. About 1 million plus.
Yeah,
1.03.
1.04
What does that mean?
What does that mean, man?
1.4700.
What is 1.4700? Okay, so that's 1.5 million.
No, it's 1.04700.
You mean 1,047,000.
Is that how you say it?
Yes, that's how you say it. Wow.
Well, I don't know. I'm only used to seeing it when they put a dot in it.
Yeah, I got your dot.
Yeah, put a dot on your head, man.
You don't know how to say it neither.
Yeah, I do. 1,047,000, like he said.
It's 1 million. Do you know how to read actual numbers, or do you have to read it the way the newspapers do it?
What do you mean?
1,047,000, all that crap.
Yeah, I do, sorta.
No, you don't. What is that? That number right there, 1,047. What is that?
1,047,000.
No, it is not 1,047,000. 1,047,000 would be 1.5 million almost. That would be a million. It would be a 1,470,000. That's what that would be. That's not what that is.
1,000,047.
1,000,047. Okay, what does that mean?
1,000,047. I don't know.
I know you don't know. Don't be grabbing a copy and telling me what the number is. 1,047,000. With that zero, that's 47,000.
Yeah, man, with the 4700, that's 470,000, you idiot. God, man. Lord, Lord, man, the day to come.
Sing me a spiritual, why don't you?
Why, you dirty...
All right, okay, watch it, watch it. What's with that spiritual stuff?
Oh, he's like, Lord, Lord. Oh, Lordy.
Shut up, man, I swear to God.
Oh, Lord, Lord, Lord. I hope that it...
Guys, take it outside, okay?
Take it outside.
The former president also addressed his often examined reaction when told of the attacks on the World Trade Center. Now, this is a good one. You know, everybody is a genius. Oh, wow, he didn't react right away. He didn't seem to care. He wasn't surprised. He knew it was coming, you know. The former president addressed his often examined reaction when told of the attacks on the World Trade Center on the 11th of September 2001. Bush, who was sitting with a class of grade school kids in Florida that morning, later was ridiculed by many in the media for not reacting more forcefully and leaving the room immediately after being told of the deadly crashes. I was listening to children read a book, he said, and Andy says, a second plane has hit the World Trade Center. America's under attack. The 64-year-old said his first reaction was anger, but with cameras and the press in the room, he feared making a big show would only inspire fear. I made the decision not to jump up and create a chaotic scene. It clarified to me that people were going to be watching my reaction. And I'd had enough experience as a governor of Texas during some disasters to know that the reaction of the leader is essential in the first stage of any crisis. Now, why can't people accept that? Because he said that at the time. He also said, I was in front of children. Little kids are reading me a book. You're going to jump up and run out of there, scare the hell out of the kids? Now, what was the reaction of a human being, a man, a father, you know, and a president was ridiculed. The people that critiqued Bush during those periods, they were the smallest of the small. These people sounded like little people. They sounded like, I would have loved to have seen all of these cats that were laying criticism on Bush. Wouldn't you love that, man? One of them jumping up and running out of there, wetting his pants.
Yeah, probably like the Chris Matthews and everything.
Chris Matthews? Boy, that voice of his, man, he'd be up around 10K. Just, you'd be bleeding from the nose listening to him. So anyway, it's in the George Bush book called I Hated Every Minute of It, My Presidency, coming out on November the whatever. No, it's called Decision Point, some jazz. Doesn't matter, but it's going to be a book that I'm quite sure will be discussed and... You know, what are you going to do? Discussed and misinterpreted. 877-876-PHIL. Pink offers some interesting parenting advice. Plus, a dead candidate is elected in California. Not that that just only happens in California. That happens in every state of the union, every election. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
Lord.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And our website is philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Watch as well as listen. Listen to our archives. Listen to the daily podcast. Get the classic Phil podcast. We're expanding our video capabilities. We are going to be logging as well as turning into downloads every single solitary archive piece of material that we have or will eventually have. We have, right now, the largest repository of any single radio show anywhere in the world. Do I know that for sure? No, but I'm willing to bet, because there ain't nobody that runs a radio website like we do, period. We got a great archive. Go over there, get a backstage pass, and start to recognize what our great, at least what this great show is all about. I was going to say our great industry.
Well, it ain't a great industry.
Well, it's a great industry. It's just, anyway. Democrat Jenny Oropeza won re-election as a state senator in California, but the implications of her victory Tuesday won't be known for some time. Oropeza, age 53, died 2 weeks before the election from a blood clot
after the poor woman was battling cancer. But the incumbent remained on the ballot, winning by a decent margin, 58% to 36%, over Republican John Stammerite. Democrats continued to ask voters to check Oropeza's name on the ballot after her death through mailers. Some Republicans filed a complaint that the mailer was an attempt to illegally influence voters. The Democratic mailer suggested that Republicans were trying to capitalize on the situation. The Republicans are trying to take unfair advantage of Jenny's tragedy, said the mailer, without mentioning Oropeza's death. They suggest that voting for Jenny will only result in a costly special election. I am asking you to vote for Jenny Oropeza. If a special election is called in a few months, you'll have the chance to thoughtfully elect your senator for a new four-year term. What is that nonsense? You know, we're in the middle of a very serious situation. I'm very sorry that the lady died. Why don't you just let people vote the right way? She's dead, so it would not be a good idea to vote for her. Thank you, the Democratic Party of California. So I encourage people to vote for her. Democrats likely hope that at least they would get the chance to nominate a new Democratic candidate. And that's likely what will happen, according to Channel 5 KTLA here in Los Angeles, saying Oropeza's seat will be declared vacant and the special election will be called in December. At the time of this posting, CNN had not been able to reach the California Democratic Party for comment because they closed the door and locked up, having won all the really cool races, and they don't care which ones they butchered up. It's not the first time a deceased candidate has won an election against an opponent. No, really? The late Missouri Governor Mel Carnahan collected enough votes to beat Republican incumbent John Ashcroft for his U.S. Senate seat in 2000. The popular governor died in a plane crash on the 16th of October 2000. By that time, it was too late to remove Carnahan's name from the ballot. His wife, Jean Carnahan, was appointed to his seat and served 2 years before losing in a special election. Sometimes these things are seen as memorials, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, but you're saying I got to get going with it. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, they see these, well, you know, the decent thing to do. You know, we got places to go and people to see. I mean, this is a very, very, it's a time where, these are not normal times, okay? I'm very sorry to hear about Jenny. Yeah, she's dead, but could you vote? No, could you just get her name off the ballot, okay? Well, that's not respectful. What are we doing here, huh? What are we playing, hopscotch, or are we voting for somebody to be our representative? Which is it? Because if it's hopscotch, just let me know, and I'll go home and get my hopscotch chalk. If it ain't, if we're actually voting for somebody, let's do that. We don't understand. She's a... Here is a story now about Pink. Now, what happened to Pink, man? You were a big Pink fan, Robert.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? I thought Pink was great.
I like Pink. I liked her.
What are you guys? Are you kidding me? See, in my Mercedes-Benz, I'm coming up.
Shut up, man. God.
She doesn't seem that bad, man.
Well, yeah, I like Pink, but I haven't heard from her in a long time. She hasn't called. She hasn't written. She hasn't done a damn thing, has she?
I heard from her.
But all of a sudden, here's Pink weighing in. American pop star Pink has declared that parents should be able to beat the crap out of their children. The 31-year-old told celebrity news site Access Hollywood the political correctness has gone too far and her own father's beating saved her life. I think parents need to beat the crap out of their kids, Pink. By the way, I think that name Pink was given to her by her father, whose real name is Alicia Moore. She said, I think the whole spanking thing and how it's all gotten PC is for the birds. When asked whether her father, a Vietnam veteran, spanked her, Pink replied, oh, he put me through the wall. It's the only reason I'm still here. It's the only reason I'm still alive. The singer's parents divorced when she was 7. By 9, Pink says she was smoking, and in her early teens, she was regularly taking LSD and ecstasy. She says she was then thrown out of the house at 15. I deserved it. I would have kicked me out when I was 8. I was not comfortable with authority or rules. I was bad. The Grammy winner, whose debut album sold 5 million copies worldwide, has been critical of younger pop stars. Her 2006 hit single, Stupid Girls, parodied the likes of Jessica Simpson, Britney Spears, and Paris Hilton, who gained notoriety through high-profile partying and constant run-ins with the law and promiscuous sex. No, it's, it went, actually, that was Pink with the promiscuous sex.
Yeah, the other one didn't do any of that.
It was, it went from being really funny to really sad, Pink said. It went from just partying and maybe hitting a person or two in a car to having a real problem, and I don't think that's funny because I've lost a lot of friends. Pink said she did all the crashing and burning early. I got that out of the way, and thank God, because I didn't have to do what poor Lindsay Lohan is doing or any of the others, where everyone was watching me screw up, she said. No, you're right. Your father beat the crap out of you away from the spotlight. So that was so that's Pink, man, laying it on us here. Here is Pink now as we listen to her best known for the hit song, Get the Party Started. Is this the one? Yeah, this song's good. Yeah. All right. Then my dad kicks me through the drywall. Then I take a hit of acid. That's all. All right, so that's Pink. Goobel. Goobel? Who's Goobel?
That was the guy who was the propaganda minister.
Well, did he start a search engine?
Yeah, Goebbels.
All right, well, would you look up on Goebbels, Pink's latest hit? No, it's Google. They have a polling app that's misleading voters. We're going to get to that next half hour. The thing about Pink, man, that I recall, I always liked her because she seemed like a real kind of a neighborhood girl, you know? She seemed like a regular chick.
Yeah, kind of a tomboy and everything with a nice ass. And anyway,
you shut up. Although you're right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so she was kind of a regular chick. Now, her old man beat the hell out of her. Well, good for her. But apparently Lindsay Lohan didn't get that from Michael Lohan. But I will tell you this, Pink, and not that you're listening, not that you would ever even think to listen to this. Oh, that's a disgrace. But anyway, your old man beating the crap out of you and then throwing you out of the house at 15, that's not what anybody calls good parenting. And lest anybody think that what Pink is saying is actual, you know, solid stuff, no. No, 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 no. Beating the crap out of a kid. You see what the beating the crap out of her got?
What?
Well, he beat the crap out of her. She's still smoking and taking acid at the age of 12.
Yeah, but what do you mean? She quit.
No, she didn't quit. She said her old man put her through a wall, threw her out of the house. Obviously, putting her through a wall didn't do anything. Throwing her out of the house was the only thing he could do. She was dropping acid at 12 and ecstasy and smoking cigarettes at 9. Now, what the hell kind of parenting is that?
Yeah, but she said that that her dad, if he had not thrown her out.
If he had not. So, in other words, the great parenting that she got was that her old man threw her out?
Yeah.
Well, big deal. How many parents do that?
What are you trying to make it bad or something, man?
It is bad. You know, take Pink saying that her old man beat the crap out of her, then threw her ass out at 15 after she was dropping acid and smoking cigarettes and bad-mouthing. That's not parenting. That's a Vietnam vet who probably had problems of his own, if you'll pardon me for saying. Slapping around some kid, she leaves, she hits the street. Only by virtue of her own strength of will and character did this kid turn into something. I think she's given her parents a lot of credit they don't deserve.
You can't say that. Her dad was a Vietnam vet, and she said that he helped her.
Well, I'm saying it. I don't care what she's saying. You tell me this crap is for real, man. Throwing a kid out of the house at the age of 15 is the most irresponsible thing in the world, and I hate it. Thank you very much. I'm Phil Hendry. That's one jackball's opinion. Michelle Bachmann will run for a leadership post in the GOP, so rather than seeing less of her, we're going to be seeing a whole lot more. Lord, Lord, Lord.
Lord, Lord.
Lord.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
What's this, bud?
It's a song I really like a lot, too.
Yeah, it's called Don't Let Me Get Me.
Who is this, Pink?
Yeah.
All right, fine. In our next story, we're going to have... Turn it down, man. Turn it down. Great. We're done with Pink, if you'll pardon the expression.
Never done with Pink.
Yeah. Anyway, Michelle Bachmann. I thought we were done with Pink.
You're going to get in trouble one of these days, and people will not go, oh, ha, ha.
Michelle Bachmann to make run at House leadership. House Republicans are beating themselves with ropes and are putting on hair shirts today, having heard that Michelle Bachmann ain't going away anytime soon. Yes, members of the party all over the country are cutting themselves with broken glass and stabbing themselves with penknives. House Republicans have wrapped up one election, but they're getting started on another right away. It's not the 2012 race, but rather the GOP, or as some people call it, the GOP, House Leadership Elections, which will be held later this month when Congress returns for its lame duck session. How do you like your lame duck? It's expected that John Boehner, sometimes pronounced Boehner, will be elected the next Speaker of the House. Unlike what Jason Rantz, our producer, thought, that Boehner would be the majority leader and that Eric Cantor, some snot-nosed punk, would go over Boehner and become the Speaker? Yeah, right, sure. Eric Cantor, what?
He didn't say that, did he?
Yeah, Rantz, he didn't know what he was talking. I think he was feverish from the flu that he doesn't have. Anyway, Eric Cantor, a Republican from Virginia, officially announced he's running for majority leader, and Kevin McCarthy, who starred in the film Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Really?
Oh, no, it's got the same name. Anyway, and Kevin McCarthy, Republican from California, put out a statement declaring his bid for Republican whip. But the fourth slot in Republican leadership, the GOP conference chair, may turn out to be the most contested, most intriguing. Representative Jeb Hensarling, a staunch fiscal conservative from Tejas, threw his hat in the ring, his big-ass cowboy hat in the ring, nearly first thing this morning. And aides to Representative Michelle Bachmann confirmed that the two-term Republican is going to make a run at GOP leadership when Congress returns and hold leadership elections later this month. I don't know. I just don't see her as bright enough. You know what I'm saying?
What do you mean, man? I mean, what do you mean bright enough?
She says a lot of dumb stuff, man. All that jazz about the Japanese and, you know, how they, you know, they were put in internment camps because of the census. I mean, all of this jazz that she takes out of the historical record and turns into some large, paranoid Barack Obama Big Brother thing. She's weird, man. I'm telling you. But the fourth slot, all right, we got to that. Let's see. Hensarling, who already has the endorsement of Eric Cantor, has the conservative credentials to lead this incoming group of Republicans. Bachmann has the same fiscal views, however, and she has the Tea Party. Bachmann founded the House Tea Party Caucus and regularly speaks to enthusiastic fans at Tea Party rallies. As a woman, Bachmann would also add a bit of diversity to the male-dominated top of the House GOP leadership team. The conference chair is responsible for unifying and managing the party and working with members to put forward a clear message. The position is open after the current GOP conference chair, Mike Pence, announced today that he will not run for leadership this time around because he can't stand it any longer. No, he said, I've come to realize that it may not be possible to compete an entire term as conference chairman, to complete an entire term as conference chairman, Pence wrote to a colleague, saying he and his family are looking to how to serve Indiana in the future. As such, I think it would be more appropriate for me to step aside now, especially since there are other talented men and women in our conference who could do the job better than me. Pence's move adds to the buzz on Capitol Hill that he could be eyeing a presidential or Indiana gubernatorial bid. Whatever.
What's that mean, whip?
The whip is the guy that runs around and kicks ass, literally. The whip is the guy. If you're the Republican whip or the Democratic whip, the minority whip or the, you know, you're in the minority if you are in the minority party. In the House of Representatives now, though, there will be a majority whip for the Republicans because they will be the majority party. Now, this guy, Kevin McCarthy, would be working for Eric Cantor. Eric Cantor is the majority leader. And Cantor would say, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to all put on green underwear and walk across the street at 3. You got that, Kevin?
Yes, sir, Mr. Majority Leader.
And all right, now go out and make it happen. And if any of these guys go against me, I want to know who they are, and I'll stick their hands, both of them, into a garbage disposal and then turn it on. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
I mean, I'm not saying being serious or anything.
What are you talking about? It sounds like it's bad.
No, but he goes out and kicks ass. See, what you don't understand. What do you think this is anyway, bud? You think it's some kind of these guys are like, you know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington or something?
The guy's going to stand for what he believes in.
Yeah, The guy's going to stand for what he believes in. That's a hot one. They're going to do what they're told. That's what they do.
Well, yeah, man, because that's politics.
You're damn right that's politics. So some punk face comes in there, some brand spanking new. Who's a new guy? Who's that dumbass that Shepard Smith was talking to today? You know that guy, Jason? Dunham or something? Should have been John Dumbass. Because seriously, this guy did not acquit himself well. Smith says to him, he says, look, you guys know that you got to cut spending, right?
Yes, we do. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, baby.
He says, we got a hell of a national debt and a hell of a national deficit. So you guys are going to have to go after the entitlement. Oh, no. No entitlements. No Medicare. Well, where are you going to go? And this jive ass starts talking about these, you know, programs for the mating cycle of the ring of the, you know, the fruit fly and all of this stuff that if you cut it all out tomorrow wouldn't amount to anything. It wouldn't even make a dent. So Smith was saying to the guy, there's no way you guys can do what you say you're going to do unless you start going after these entitlements. There's no way in hell it ain't going to happen. And he's right. He's right. And this guy, Mr. Tea Party, Mr. Honest, Mr. Upfront and Beautiful and Personal, this sack of crap couldn't come out and just spit it out and say it. I ain't saying the guy's a bad guy. I'm not saying it's an easy job.
What do you want the guy to say?
Be honest, man. If you're going to cut spending, and it's going to be something that's going to actually mean something, there's no way you can't cut spending without going after Medicare, Social Security, all the entitlements. You have to. That's how bad this debt and these deficits are. You must. And if there is no cat out there willing to say it, and they don't want to say it, you want to know why? I'll tell you why. Because all of these people that don't like big government, yeah, they don't like big government, but they love that Social Security. That's one hell of a piece of big government. They like that Medicare, that one hell of a piece of big government. Oh, yeah, they don't like big government, except the big government they like. I'm telling you, folks, this is an insane exercise. When you're listening to this horse dung about how these people want smaller, they want smaller government unless it's big government that they like.
So what's a whip do?
The whip? What do you mean a whip?
The guy that worked for Canada.
Oh, yeah, the whip. He's the guy that goes and tells these guys what's going to happen. Now, we're voting today, and we're going to vote on X, Y, and Z, yeah? I want all these jackasses lined up. Let's go. Come on. Yes, sir. He runs off, and he lines them up. Now, some of these guys may say, well, I don't know. I don't think I want to vote for that. If you don't, oh, man, if you don't, let me tell you what's going to happen. You don't. You cannot count on our help with this, that. Now, you see some of these guys get chewed up and spit out, man. Who was that clown, that Massa? Remember that freak?
Oh, yeah, that guy having a tickling contest and everything with everybody out there.
All right, so Michelle Bachmann expected to make a run at the House leadership thing. Let's listen to Michelle here. Chris Matthews was interviewing her, and I think he's got the hots for her. I'm not sure, but it looked to me like he did. It looked like he was licking his lips and staring her up and down like a real sick creep. Turn that stuff off, bud, before I go crazy. All right, here is Michelle Bachmann and Chris Matthews. And this is a 35-second clip, so I hope there's more on it than just him saying that she looks hypnotized. But Matthews wasn't happy that Representative Michelle Bachmann, who won re-election last night, wasn't answering his questions head on.
Congresswoman Bachmann, are you hypnotized tonight? Has someone hypnotized you? Because no matter what I ask you, you give the same answer. Are you hypnotized? Has someone put you under a trance tonight? Did you give me the same answer no matter what question I put to you?
I think the American people are the ones that finally are speaking tonight. We're coming out of our trance. Really, we're coming out of our nightmare.
Okay,
so
well,
I think people are thrilled tonight. I imagine that thrill is probably maybe not quite so tingly on your leg anymore.
I know you
sure
get to that. Your sign holder has already raised that issue.
How about this?
I forgot he was black tonight.
So anyway, that was Michelle Bachmann talking to Matthews. Talk about a couple of winners. All right. Meanwhile, Pence's move adds to the buzz on Capitol Hill that he could be eyeing a presidential bid like anyone cares. Jeb Hensarling is not only one of my dearest friends, he's one of the most principled conservative. Okay, so we got the basic lowdown on this thing. We got Boehner, who's going to be the Speaker of the House. Cantor is the majority leader. McCarthy's going to be the whip. He's going to kick ass, or he wants to be. And meanwhile, this thing called the GOP conference chair, which is a very intriguing thing that everybody thinks is really important. We don't know anything about it, and we don't care. So that is that, man. And I made this prediction before the show, and I'm going to make it again.
You're going to talk about Ford and everything.
Hold on for a minute, will you? Let me get it out.
This is good, man. I thought this was good.
All right. Let me tell you something. You know, I agree that we had to do something to shake it up. There's no question, and I'm glad that that happened. I won't tell you how I voted, but, you know, I wanted to shake it up too. But now let me lay the facts of life on you. Because if people think that they're going to go back to Washington in January and it's going to be a happy fizzies party, I got news for you, man. The President of the United States has a thing called a veto pen. And I understand that there's a thing called overriding vetoes. Now, I've been around long enough to have seen presidents like Ford and Nixon who didn't have anything even close to a Republican majority in either house. They had minorities. Ford couldn't get anything done. What happened to Ford was an interesting thing. Nixon got, you know, he quit. So here's Ford, and everybody thought, well, we'll get rid of, you know, this guy Ford, man. This guy is the heir apparent to, this guy was the vice president of a crook, a criminal. We are the Congress of the United States. We'll see this thing through. The American people have nobody to trust except for us. We will lead. But they ran up against this guy Ford, who said, no, you're not. You're not going to. What do you think you're going to do? Well, we're the Congress of the United States. And Ford veto, man. I mean, he was laying a veto on these cats as fast as they could send the bills. Then you, of course, remember Reagan with, you know, I've only got one thing to say to the tax increasers, make my day. But see, Reagan had a little bit going for him. He had the Senate, and he worked it out with fellow Irishman Tip O'Neill, whatever that means. But now you got Obama. And if you think for 1 minute that they're going to go in there and they're going to repeal Obama's pet project, which is the health care reform, as well as the finance reform, and they're going to say, here it is, sign it. You want to know what's going to happen, don't you? He'll veto. Now, there are people who are saying right now, well, they'll just override it. Really? I got news for you, friend. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it's in the water or in the air, or whether suddenly a veto, when they see veto, they just all of a sudden lose their guts. But a presidential veto ain't an automatic thing to override. It's a very difficult thing for these guys to get around. Now, I know these cats, the Republicans and the Tea Party people, just like the Democrats before them, they thought they were going to go in there and start muscling everybody. Well, you saw how it helped the Democrats. Those guys, they had it all going for them, man. They had the 60 in the Senate. They had the majority in the House. They couldn't do it. They couldn't find their ass with both hands. You never saw a bunch of people so completely and utterly feckless. So now here comes these Republicans. I ain't saying that they won't get a moving. I'm not saying that they're not going to put the fear of Jesus into a few people, but they got the President of the United States sitting there. He's got a veto pen. You know full well. Yeah, and please don't tell me I'm telling you something you don't know, that Obama is going to pull that veto pen out, man, and really put it to work. And then overriding those vetoes will be a very interesting exercise. I'm not saying they won't be able to.
Yeah, but how much, don't you have to have like a certain number and everything?
Yeah. You got to have some two-thirds. You got to override a presidential veto. You got to have I don't know what you got to have, man. What do you got to have, a simple majority? But in any event, it's a very rare thing indeed, man, to override these presidential vetoes. All right, now I wanted to read to you just very, very quickly here the presidential memoirs, A World Transformed. That was Daddy Bush's presidential memoir, My Life by Bill Clinton. An American Life was Ronald Reagan's. Keeping Faith was Jimmy Carter's. A Time to Heal by Gerald Ford. RN, The Memoirs of Richard Nixon by Richard Nixon. The Vantage Point by Lyndon Johnson. Mandate for Change by Dwight Eisenhower. Memoirs by Harry S. Truman. And The Memoirs of Herbert Hoover.
What about Kennedy?
Kennedy got assassinated, man.
Yeah, he couldn't write them, man, because he's dead.
Oh. Well, somebody else could have rid of them.
Somebody else could have rid of them? Like who, man?
Jackie Kennedy or somebody.
Well, the fact is he didn't write any, man, because he got dead before he could write them. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back. World famous Phil Henry Show. 35% of American workers have been bullied at work. Have you been a victim of bullying? Plus, a Google app sent people to the wrong voting booth. your problem, man, not mine.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Yeah, I'd be all over that, you kidding?
Who, Debbie Wasserman Schultz?
I think it's pretty hot.
Man.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, right. You'd love it.
I'm too much of a gentleman.
You'd love it.
Just shut up, man.
You like that Debbie Wasserman Schultz? Man, you're diseased, man.
Why am I diseased? I think she's hot looking.
Okay, bud, good for you, man. You know, you might want to, if you go, ask, get her a toupee.
What are you talking about?
Man, like she's got male pattern baldness.
You're insane, both you guys. She's hot. She's hot.
All right, Google polling app misleads voters, sending them to the wrong polling place. Well, I'm so very sorry that happened to you guys. Google can help you research candidates, watch their ads, poke fun at their gaffes, and find out how they did on election day, but the site hasn't exactly fared very well at getting voters to the right polling places. One of the search companies, Election Center Apps, which helps citizens find their assigned ballot boxes, has served up a series of errors that may have sent some voters to the wrong polling places. A study Tuesday by Aristotle, a political technology company, predicts that more than 700,000 households in a collection of 12 battleground states may have experienced errors on the site that told them to head to the wrong polling stations. If you're being sent to the wrong polling place, it's a pretty big deal, especially if it's toward the end of the day, and especially if it's an election that's a closely contested one, like 2010's John Phillip. If you're so stupid that you're relying on a Google app to get you to the polling place and send you to the wrong polling place, boy, what a dumbass you are, said John Phillip, CEO of Aristotle. Aristotle premised its prediction on a series of simulations. The company selected about 1,000 households, at least that's what they told Google, in targeted states. Then they told Google they compared their polling place data against Google's app. Then they told Google they derived an error rate. And then they told Google a bunch of other lies.
You don't think they did it?
I don't know, man. You could do that, though, couldn't you? Okay, here's what we're going to do, Google. Meanwhile, they all went out and golfed. Google spokesman Aaron Zamost said the company worked diligently to fix the problem and make sure it reflects the most up-to-date information provided to us by the Board of Elections. But as you can see, the Board of Elections, they may have their head up their ass. The search engine encouraged users to let the company know whenever they find a mistake in the data, which it has compiled through state election Meanwhile, the guys at Aristotle making off with a bundle of cash on the subcontract from Google, and they didn't do jack. They told Google how messed up their app was, but Google already knew that, and Aristotle is now closing down, locking the door, taking the key, and throwing it in the lake. They don't need the company anymore. What a way to make money. But the mishap still provoked a harsh rebuke from Aristotle. Google is a great company, but do things well, yes. This is not one of them, said Phillips, without his pants on, as he was folding his slacks for an address later on. We caught him when he was coming off the golf course, I'm sure you understand. All right.
You think she's a Jap?
Who?
Debbie Wasserman.
Don't you ever...
Shut up.
You can't say that, man. That's anti-Semitic, or how they say it.
Anti-Semitic.
I didn't say anything.
Yeah, you did. Jap.
I meant, is she from Japan?
Yeah, I'm sure that's what you meant, man.
Is she?
Well, then, that deserves another smack, then, doesn't it? Debbie Wasserman Schultz is not from Japan. In any event, good luck, bud, getting a date from her. Actually, Debbie, good luck getting a date from Bud. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rance, technical director Charles Wagon, our associate producer and screener is Dan Northcraft. Don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com for all of your radio comedy needs. Pick up a backstage pass, man. Get with it, baby. No alternative.
Phil Hendry.